With continual development in technology, hackers and cybercriminals are getting better and better at installing viruses and hacking your electronic devices. We've all had antivirus software, but your run-of-the-mill software just isn't good enough anymore. With Surfshark Antivirus, not only will you have antivirus scans and real-time virus protection, but you'll also have access to a VPN. You'll be protected from targeted ads and tracking. You'll be notified if your data gets leaked by data brokers. And most importantly, it's incredibly easy to set up and use. If you feel like your online protection should be better, use the link in the description and episode notes to get 76% off Surfshark Antivirus today and feel safe every day on your devices. We've all gone to websites only to be presented with a pop-up asking if we'll accept the cookies. Well, did you know that by accepting those cookies, you're allowing that website to collect data on you? These websites will then sell your information to data brokers, who will then create a digital profile of you, which can be used by banks, advertisers, and scammers against you. Well, thanks to Incogni, you no longer need to worry about your data being stolen and sold. Incogni is a tool that will remove your data from these companies for you. All you need to do is sign up, allow Incogni to work for you, and they will contact data brokers on your behalf and guarantee that your digital ID is removed from the internet. Use the link in the description and episode notes and get Incogni today for $6.49 per month on a year plan. And protect your data and digital ID.
Hello, and welcome to the Essential Reads podcast. I'm Isaac, and my goal is to bring to you a bunch of audiobooks from your favourite classic authors such as Orson Welles, Robert Louis Stevenson, John Steinbeck, and many more. Come join me on this journey to help get these books to the masses in an easy, accessible way. Let's start.
Fahrenheit 451 Part 2 The Sieve and the Sand. They read the long afternoon through, while the cold November rains fell from the sky upon the quiet house. They sat in the hall, because the parlour was so empty and grey-looking without its wall lit with orange and yellow confetti, and the skyrockets, and women in gold mesh dresses, and men in black velvet pulling 100-pound rabbits from silver hats. The parlour was dead, and Mildred kept peering in at it with a blank expression as Montag paced to the floor, and came back, and squatted down, and read a page as many as 10 times, aloud. We could not tell the precise moment when friendship is formed. As in filling a vessel drop by drop, there is at last a drop which makes it run over, so in a series of kindnesses, there is at least one which makes the heart run over. Montag sat, listening to the rain. Is that what it was in the girl next door? I've tried so hard to figure. She's dead. Let's talk about someone alive, for goodness sake. Montag did not look back at his wife as he went trembling along the hall to the kitchen, where he stood for a long time watching the rain hit the windows before he came back down to the hall in the grey light, waiting for the tremble to subside. He opened another book. My favourite subject, myself. He squinted at the wall. That, my favourite subject. Myself.
I understand that one, said Mildred.
But Clarice's favourite subject wasn't herself. It was everyone else, and me. She was the first person in a good many years I've really liked. She was the first person I can remember who looked straight at me as if I counted. He lifted the two books. These men have been dead a long time, but I know their words point one way or another to Clarice. Outside the front door, in the rain, a faint scratching. Montag froze. He saw Mildred thrust herself back to the wall and gasp.
Someone, the door. Why doesn't the door voice tell us?
I shut it off. Under the doorsill, a slow, probing sniff, an exhalation of electric steam. Mildred laughed.
It's only a dog, that's what. You want me to shoo him away?
Stay where you are. Silence. The cold rain falling, and the smell of blue electricity blowing under the locked door.
Let's get back to work, said Montag quietly. Mildred kicked at a book.
Books aren't people. You read and I look around, but there isn't anybody.
He stared at the parlour that was dead and grey as the waters of an ocean that might teem with life if they switched on the electronic sun.
Now, said Mildred, my family is people. They tell me things. I laugh, they laugh. And the colours.
Yes, I know.
And besides, if Captain B knew about these books...
She thought about it. Her face grew amazed, and then horrified.
He might come and burn the house and the family. That's awful. Think of our investment. Why should I read? What for?
What for? Why? Said Montag. I saw the damnedest snake in the world the other night. It was dead, but it was alive. It could see, but it couldn't see. You want to see that snake? It's an emergency hospital where they filed a report on all the junk that snake got out of you. Would you like to go and check their file? Maybe you'd look under Guy Montag. Or maybe under fear or war. Would you like to go to that house that burnt last night and rake the ashes for the bones of the woman who set fire to her own house? What about Clarice McKellen? Where do we look for her? The morgue? Listen.
The bombers crossed the sky and crossed the sky over the house, gasping, murmuring, whistling like an immense invisible fan circling in emptiness.
Jesus God, said Montag. Every hour, so many damned things in the sky. How the hell did those bombers get up here in every single second of our lives? Why doesn't someone want to talk about it? We've started and won two atomic wars since 2022. Is it because we're having so much fun at home we've forgotten the world? Is it because we're so rich and the rest of the world's so poor that we just don't care if they are? I've heard rumors. The world is starving, but we're well fed. Is it true? The world works hard and we play? Is that why we're hated so much? I've heard rumors about hate, too, once in a long while over the years. Do you know why?
I don't, that's sure.
Maybe the books can get us half out of the cave. They might just stop us from making the same damn insane mistakes. I don't hear those idiot bastards in your parlor talking about it. God, Millie, don't you see? An hour a day, 2 hours with these books? Maybe.
The telephone rang. Mildred snatched the phone.
Anne, she laughed. Yes, and the white clown's on tonight.
Montag walked to the kitchen and threw the book down.
Montag, he said, really stupid. Where do we go from here? Do we turn the books in? Forget it.
He opened the book to read over Mildred's laughter. Poor Millie, he thought.
Poor Montag. It's mud to you, too. But where do you get help? Where do you find a teacher this late?
Hold on.
He shut his eyes. Yes, of course.
Again, he found himself thinking of the Green Park a year ago. The thought had been with him many times recently, but now he remembered how it was that day in the city park, when he had seen that old man in the black suit hide something quickly in his coat. The old man leapt up as if to run, and Montag said,
Wait.
I haven't done anything, cried the old man, trembling.
No one said you did.
They had sat in the green soft light, without saying a word for a moment, and then Montag talked about the weather, and then the old man responded with a pale voice. It was a quite strange meeting. The old man admitted to being a retired English professor who had been thrown out upon the world 40 years ago when the last liberal arts college shut for lack of students and patronage. His name was Faber, and when he finally lost his fear of Montag, he talked in a condensed voice, looking at the sky and the trees in the green park. And when an hour had passed, he said something to Montag, and Montag sensed it was a rhymeless poem. Then the old man grew even more courageous, and said something else, and that was a poem too. Faber held his hand over his left coat pocket and spoke these words gently, and Montag knew that if he reached out, he might pull a book of poetry from the man's coat. But he did not reach out. His hands stayed on his knees, numbed and useless.
"I don't talk things, sir," said Faber. "I talk the meaning of things. I sit here and know I'm alive."
That was all there was to it, really. An hour of monologue, a poem, a comment. And then, without either acknowledging the fact that Montag was a fireman, Faber, with a certain trembling voice, wrote his address on a slip of paper.
"For your file," he said. "In case you decide to be angry with me."
"I'm not angry," Montag said, surprised. Mildred shrieked with laughter in the hall. Montag went to his bedroom closet and flipped through his file wallet to the heading Future Investigations. Faber's name was there. He hadn't turned it in, and he hadn't erased it. He dialed the call on a secondary phone. The phone on the far end of the line called Faber's name a dozen times before the professor answered in a faint voice. Montag identified himself, and was met with a lengthy silence.
"Yes, Mr. Montag."
"Professor Faber, I have a rather odd question to ask. How many copies of the Bible are left in this country?"
"I don't know what you're talking about.
I want to know if there are any copies left at all.
This is some sort of trap. I can't talk to just anyone on the phone."
"How many copies of Shakespeare and Plato?"
"None. You should know as well as I do. None."
Faber hung up. Montag put down the phone. None. A thing he knew, of course, from the firehouse listings. But somehow he had wanted to hear it from Faber himself. In the hall, Mildred's face was suffused with excitement.
"Well, the ladies are coming over."
Montag showed her a book.
"This is the Old and New Testament, and..."
"Don't start that again.
It might be the last copy in this part of the world."
"You've got to hand it back tonight, don't you? Captain Beatty knows you've got it, doesn't he?"
"I don't think he knows which book I stole. But how do I choose a substitute? Do I turn in Mr. Jefferson? Mr. Thoreau? Which is least valuable? If I pick a substitute and Beatty does know which book I stole, he'll guess we've an entire library here."
Mildred's mouth twitched.
"See what you're doing? You'll ruin us. Who's more important, me or that Bible?"
She was beginning to shriek now, sitting there like a wax doll melting in its own heart. He could hear Beatty's voice. "Sit down, Montag. Watch. Delicately. Like the petals of a flower. Light the first page. Light the second page. Each becomes a black butterfly. Beautiful, eh? Light the third page. From the second. And so on. Chain smoking. Chapter by chapter. All the silly things the words mean. All the false promises. All the second-hand notions and time-worn philosophies." There sat Beatty, perspiring gently, the floor littered with swarms of black moths that had died in a single storm. Mildred stopped screaming as quickly as she had started. Montag was not listening.
"There's only one thing to do," he said. "Some time before tonight, when I give the book to Beatty, I have to have a duplicate made."
"You'll be here for the White Clown tonight and the ladies coming over," cried Mildred.
Montag stopped at the door, with his back turned.
"Millie."
A silence.
"What?"
"Millie, does the White Clown love you?"
No answer.
"Millie, does..." He licked his lips. "Does your family love you? Love you very much. Love you with all their heart and soul, Millie."
He felt her blinking slowly at the back of his neck.
"Why'd you ask such a silly question like that?"
He felt he wanted to cry, but nothing would happen to his eyes or his mouth.
If you see that dog outside, said Mildred, give him a kick for me.
He hesitated, listening at the door. He opened it and stepped out. The rain had stopped, and the sun was setting in the clear sky. The street and the lawn and the porch were empty. He let his breath go in a great sigh. He slammed the door. He was on the subway. I'm numb, he thought. When did the numbness really begin in my face? In my body? The night I kicked the pill bottle in the dark, like kicking a buried mine? The numbness will go away, he thought. It'll take time, but it'll do it. Or Faber will do it for me. Someone, somewhere, will give me back the old face and old hands the way they were. Even the smile, he thought. The old burnt-in smile. That was gone. I'm lost without it. The subway fled past him. Cream-tile, jet-black, cream-tile, jet-black numerals, and darkness, and more darkness. More darkness, and the total adding itself. Once as a child, he'd sat upon a yellow dune by the sea in the middle of the blue, hot summer day, trying to fill a sieve with sand. Because some cruel cousin said, fill this sieve and you'll get a dime. And the faster he poured, the faster it sifted through with a hot whispering. His hands were tired, and the sand was boiling. The sieve was empty. Seated there, in the midst of July, without a sound, he felt the tears move down his cheeks. Now, as the vacuum underground rushed him through the dead cellars of town, jolting him, he remembered the terrible logic of that sieve, and he looked down and saw that he was carrying the Bible, open. There were people in the suction train, but he held the book in his hands, and the silly thought came to him. If you read fast, and read all, maybe some of the sand will stay in the sieve. But he read, and words fell through, and he thought in a few hours, there will be Beatty. And here will be me, handing this over. So no phrase must escape me. Each line must be memorized. I will do it myself. He clenched the book in his fists. Trumpets blared. Denham's Dentrifice. Shut up, thought Montag. Consider the lilies of the field. Denham's Dentrifice. They toil not. Denham's. They toil not. Denham's. Consider the lilies of the field. Shut up, shut up. Dentrifice. He tore the book open and flicked the pages and felt them as if he were blind. He picked at the shape of individual letters, not blinking. Denham, spelt D-E-N. They toil not, neither do they. A fierce whisper of hot sand through an empty sieve. Denham's, does it? Consider the lilies, the lilies, the lilies. Denham's dental detergent. Shut up, shut up, shut up! It was a plea, a cry so terrible that Montag found himself on his feet. The shocked inhabitants of the loud car, staring, moving back from the man with the insane, gorged face, the gibbering, dry mouth, the flapping book in his fist. The people who had been sitting a moment before, tapping their feet to the rhythm of Denham's Dentrifice, Denham's Dandy Dental Detergent, Denham's Dentrifice, 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 1-2, 1-2-3, 1-2, 1-2-3. The people whose mouths had been faintly twitching the words, Dentrifice, Dentrifice, Dentrifice. The train radio vomited upon Montag in retaliation. A great ton-load of music made of tin, copper, silver, chromium, and brass. The people were pounded into submission. They did not run. There was no place to run. The great air train fell down its shaft in the earth. Lilies of the field! Denham's! Lilies, I said! The people stared. Call the guard. The man's off. Knollview! The train hissed to its stop. Knollview! A cry. Denham's! A whisper. Montag's mouth barely moved. Lilies. The train door opened. Montag stood. The door gasped and started shut. Only then did he leap past the other passengers, screaming in his mind,
plunged through the slicing door only in time. He ran over the white tiles, up through the tunnels, ignoring the escalators because he wanted to feel his feet move, arms swing, lungs clench, unclench, feel his throat go raw with air. A voice drifted after him. Denims, denims, denims. The train hissed like a snake. The train vanished in its hole.
Thank you so very much for listening. If you enjoyed, please leave a review. And if you really want to support me, share this chapter with your friends, family, and whoever you feel would enjoy it. And if you really wish to support me, head to my Patreon. The link is in the episode notes. If you choose to follow the podcast, you'll have 3 new chapters per week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Once again, I thank you for listening. And until next time, bye-bye.